Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Small Screen Star Wars. As always, I'm Julian Musha. I'm joined by Rachel Wilkinson.
Hello. Good to be back.
Yeah, it's been a little bit. We've been
a little bit
of a hiatus, but that's because there really hasn't been much to talk about.
That's true.
There is one news story we'll get to before we jump into things. And what are we doing today? That's the question that's on the top of everyone's mind. We're going to be talking about Star Wars Visions, the new anime anthology that dropped on Disney Plus. Was it last week or the week before? I think late the week before.
Yeah, I think so. We're a little late to the game, but that's okay.
That's fine. I mean, there's so many episodes. It's going to take you days to finish it.
days and days.
Days and days and days. So that's the plan for today. Before we get into that, I'll just remind everyone, if you do like the show, it makes a huge difference to us if you can like and subscribe and all that kind of stuff on your podcast player of choice. And if you want to help support the show in a more financial manner, you can head over to patreon.com/TowerBabbleCast, and you'll be able to, for as little as $5 a month, get access to a monthly film club that we do. Rachel was supposed to be on this month for the 1998 film Snake Eyes, but she wasn't able to join us.
No, sorry.
But she was on last month when we did another Nicolas Cage movie, Face Off. So if you want to hear that and much, much more, please head over to Patreon and subscribe there to help support the show. Next month, we're doing another 90s movie. We're continuing the 90s movie trend, and we're going to be doing the Catherine Bigelow film Point Break.
Oh, so, I love Point Break.
I've never seen it. So it's going to be very exciting.
What?
Yeah.
I think I yelled at you about this before.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Yeah.
The proto Fast and Furious film. So you can, like I said, subscribe to the show and you'll be able to listen while while Rachel makes fun of me for not having seen it.
Yeah, I will definitely be on that one. I can lend you my copy.
Do you have it on Blu-ray?
I don't know. DVD, probably regular from the 90s.
Listen, I only watch things in HD or 4K now.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Sorry.
Anyway, so people are probably wondering, what's this news story I was talking about? Well, the news story is we got a new poster for the Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah, it's good.
And a release date. And I'm just pulling it up here now so I can find it. I think that was actually today. Might have been yesterday.
Oh, yeah. I saw it. It's
December 29th on Disney Plus. And it's a pretty cool poster. It has Boba Fett sitting on that like throne in Jabba's palace.
Mm-hmm.
And what's surprising to me is his armor looks beat up again.
Yeah.
You know, like, we had just seen him like refurbish it all, and now it's like all scratched up again. So I think that's interesting. I think they looked at the design and said, yeah, this is cool for a couple episodes, but I think people like it, a more beat up version of the armor. So
I think so too. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. That's the only takeaway I had there. We're also, by the way, record this live. So we're on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. Periscope used to exist. Now it is just the Twitter Live or whatever it's called. And we have Marcos, friend of the show. Marcos is in the chat. He's asking me. I listened to the full thing, but funny enough, I was debating of watching this tonight. Is it worth it? Absolutely. So let's get into this.
Oh, okay,
and dive into this whole thing. And I have it playing behind me. If you're watching live, you can kind of see some of the visual stylings. But in my opinion, and I think I kind of went into it with an expectation that it was going to be Japanese stories told with like a Star Wars trappings.
Right.
But I think it's actually the opposite. I think it's Star Wars stories told with Japanese trappings, which I think is really, really cool. I don't know which one's better or worse.
Ooh, I have a list.
And we'll get into which ones we think are the best.
Yeah.
But I just mean compared to those two different methodologies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's a right or wrong answer there. I will say I was surprised by how faithful to the Star Wars world these stories were in most cases.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I would say I'm a lapsed anime fan. You know, I used to watch Dragon Ball back in the day, and I used to watch Yu-Gi-Oh, and I watched Dragon Ball, and obviously Pokemon.
Right.
I said Dragon Ball already. Digimon is what I was wanting to say.
Okay.
So there's been a lot of different influences, and I haven't really seen a lot of like the major anime like films like Ghost in the Shell, like one of the studios behind some of these, or at least one of these shorts is actually the same studio who did Ghost in the Shell.
So okay.
Seminal work. And Trigger, which is another studio that's been involved in these, done a lot of like classic anime work. But I just haven't seen enough. And there's a part of anime that turns me off a little bit. And a part of that is just how on the nose it is sometimes. And it's in this too. There's a lot of like, the lightsaber is red. It's like, yeah, no shit. We see that. Like,
you don't
say that out loud.
I know exactly what you're saying. The dialogue is a little, I get what you mean. Mm-hmm.
It's stilted, but intentionally. So it's stylistic in that way. So,
okay. I was curious if that is there's a translation reason behind that. Cause I'm assuming that they created these in Japanese first.
100%. So these are all Japanese first.
Yes.
And then they're dubbed in English. Mm-hmm. So
I feel like some things might not have, like the way it's said in Japanese is probably a little bit different, but it wouldn't translate right. So they kind of have to make it a little bit more.
100%.
So it's a little more on the nose. But
So it's like an artifact of the localization, but mm-hmm. I think more so than that, it's intentionally built into the way the dialogue is said.
And
maybe that's part of the way that, and I don't fully understand, you know, the phraseology of Japanese conversation, that maybe it is a little bit more, you know, straightforward on the nose. But I think my understanding is, and again, I'm not an expert on this, but my understanding is that it's more intentionally done like that in anime to really drive home points.
Probably.
They want to drive stuff home. And we're not used to it in the Western world because we like to, there's a lot more of this kind of like show, don't tell type of thinking in storytelling. Mm-hmm. It's like, you don't need to tell someone something's red if it's red, right?
Right.
Unless it's
a black
and white movie, I suppose. So that kind of stuff is rubs me the wrong way. But overall, I think that it just looks super cool. So all these have just super distinct visual styles.
Right. Yeah.
Specifically, I think, you know, the first one, which is the duel.
Yes.
Is so cool. You have to give props to this kind of like black and white, like film grain style that they go for here with just these little blitz of color. And I guess we'll just go by, you know, episode to episode, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, yeah, when it comes down to like Marcos's question, like I do think it's totally worth watching. Like they're not very long. You can get through most of them in probably a night. So I think it's definitely worth, I don't know, like at least tuning into to watch them.
Yeah, that's the other thing. So my understanding was that it was originally going to be a film. Like they were going to stitch these all together as one big thing and you're going to sit down and watch them all.
Mm-hmm.
But they decided to split it up into this kind of individual episode. I think they still built it in a certain way. Like you start with one and you go through to the end and they all have... there's a through line a little bit. Some of the people have talked about that. I didn't really feel that necessarily. I think you can really watch them in any order, but I would say starting with the duel is a good place to start because it's just so cool.
It started off real strong with that one, almost too strong, but it was really good.
Yeah, that's true. And it plays homage to the roots of Star Wars. So there is a lot of, Asian influence, Eastern influence, Japanese specifically, on George Lucas when he was making Star Wars for the first time. There's a bunch of behind the scenes little featurettes that go along with this, which I think is great. You should watch all those. And that's what I was watching before we started recording here.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the creators mentioned that like when he was growing up, because he was growing up in Japan and Star Wars is still quite popular there, he was able to very easily see the Eastern influences. Like this is where they borrowed from Japan. Right.
Right.
And he wanted to be able to kind of flip that on the head and say, okay, well now that I am creating this stuff, I can take it back to the roots and kind of reverse it and say, take the American, the Western parts and kind of Asianize them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And make them feel more part of like Japanese culture. Almost a flip. And I think that totally applies to the whole anthology. Because again, like there always has been like the idea of obviously Jedi are very much like samurai, right?
Yes, and of course.
The Force is very much like Buddhism, not obviously like one-to-one, but there's elements there that are similar.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about that in those featurettes as well. And they're just like, and then obviously the styling of like, you know, the Darth Vader's helmet.
Oh, of course. Instance, yeah.
You know, like, these are things that are, I think, if you weren't aware, now you might be, that these are Japanese influenced like stylings. So it seems almost appropriate. It's crazy that it's taken this long that we've got that it, you know, to get to this point where we have a, you know, a fully Japanese made Star Wars story. And it does make me think of, do you remember that that anime TIE Fighter video that was going around YouTube? It's been on YouTube for probably 20 years.
Ooh, I don't know. I don't know if I've ever seen
Very cool. It was It was one of the first kind of like fan-made things I've ever seen.
Oh, okay,
Anime style with a TIE Fighter pilot kind of like taking out X-Wings and stuff. It's super detailed and cool. And They basically just took that idea and said, well, what if we did that with all things here? That being said, a lot of these stories I think are fairly similar. I wish there was more variety in the stories. They're kind of, a lot of them are revolve around Jedi and light side, dark side stuff. And that's fine because that's very core to Star Wars. But because none of these studios were like working together and said like, oh, I'll do this story and you do this story, you end up with a lot of similar kind of themes.
Okay.
I would have loved to have seen like, you know, we don't really get to see any space combat really.
No, that's true.
There's not really like a bounty hunter story or like a smuggler story. It's just kind of like all Jedi or Sith. And there's a lot of, I've noticed this as well, there's a lot of characters that you think are Jedi turn out are actually Sith. Like, and more often than you would think. Like, it's like, that's weird. That keeps popping up as like a theme, but it does. So anyway, that's a long answer to your question, Marcos. But yeah, absolutely. 100%. 100% worth watching. I think it's, in my opinion, it's, I would say it's required reading for like a really hardcore Star Wars fan, if you're not kind of paying homage to the Japanese roots. I have been meaning to go back, and by go back, I mean watch them for the first time, but go back in time because Akira Kurosawa films are old. I've been meaning to go and watch them, you know, things like Yojimbo and Seven Samurai, because they are, you know, people always constantly point to those films as being like major inspirations for George Lucas. I'm like, that's awesome. I must be into it then. I'll probably like it. But I just haven't had a chance to go and, you know, kind of see some of those things. So this kind of gets me close. I still need to do it, obviously. But where do we want to begin? Let's start with, I guess, the duel.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find here on IMDb if it has the studio names, and it doesn't seem to be easily visible. But we'll start here, and I'll just quickly recap the story, and then we can kind of talk about some of our favorite moments and whatnot.
Yeah, sure.
But I love the design of this short.
Yeah, me too.
It's black and white with elements of color, which is always, I think, a really fun kind of blending of old and new, you know.
Yes.
By the way, also, which is really cool, is that they actually do a lot of this episode is done in like a 3D animation, but it's designed to look like it's 2D animated. Which is I think very cool as well. There's like a really cool blending of that, and they add this kind of these textured effects to kind of make it look like it's hand drawn.
Yeah, really make it look like really old, but
So anyway, this idea is this kind of this Yojimbo style story where you have this kind of like Ronin-esque character, this like wandering Jedi, and his like R2-D2 style, you know, astromech droid.
Yeah.
And
he was so cute with his little hat.
Oh, I know. and then they have this group of bandits come in, and they're kind of attacking this village, and they're kind of defending themselves, but then it turns out there's like this Sith warrior woman who's just wrecking shop. So this samurai type character, he kind of joins the fight to defend the town and defeat the Sith. And it's really cool, but the big surprise in this short, which again becomes less surprising the more it's done throughout these shorts, is that he's not actually a Jedi at all. And I think the line is, unfortunately, I'm not a Jedi, because there's this cool line where he says, where she's like, I haven't killed a Jedi in a long time.
Yeah.
And he pulls his lightsaber in this very dramatic fashion. And by the way, another thing that keeps happening in these shorts is that all these lightsabers, for some reason, have hilts. So they can put their lightsaber away.
Though.
It does look very cool.
It looks very cool because it's very, you know, the samurai sword, right?
Yes,
or like a katana.
Totally.
Like it looks so cool. I don't know. I thought it was, I just loved that part.
Oh, that's the other thing too. Cause like, you know how, Ahsoka's lightsabers are very much inspired by.
Her hilts are basically, what do you call them? They have like the katana sort of like
those like crisscrossy,
like little diamonds on the same. Yeah.
So I think it's always amazing when you can have a lightsaber that's also a samurai sword.
Yeah.
And like so in this traditional sense, it's very cool. So I liked it a lot. Mm-hmm. It's one of the few of these that really felt like a fully fledged story and less of kind of like just a pitch.
Right. This one I wanted more of. Like when I was watching, I'm like, man, like I just want to keep watching this story. Mm-hmm. I want to know more about it. I want to see more of this character. Like I thought it was such a cool story.
Yeah, he's collecting kyber crystals.
Yeah.
Like, so like what's the deal there? Like it seems like maybe he's like a disillusioned Sith where like he kind of is like lost.
I was curious about that. It's like, is he a Sith or did he just like kill a Sith and that's why his lightsaber's red? You know what I mean? I was curious if maybe he could have, and he's just a Sith and now he's hunting other ones. But are you really a Sith if you're killing?
I guess they
do kill each other all the time. So
in name only, I suppose. But I guess my reading of it was that he was a student of the dark side, but then has kind of lost his, doesn't believe in that anymore.
Yes.
And is trying to repay his debts by taking out these other, you know, dark side
evil,
users.
Yeah. That makes sense actually. Yeah. So it's like, I get it how he can't call himself a Jedi, but he's not a Sith. So he's kind of in the middle.
Right. So that's cool. Like this gray Jedi idea, but he's got a red lightsaber. I think there's this kind of just fascination with red lightsabers just generally that they just look very cool. And they do. Yes, that's fair.
They do. They do.
That's fair. So I think that's a part of it. There's this really cool moment where they fight on a log going down the river. And one of the things that really surprised me, by the way, too, in this short was that because it was the first one, I was like, interesting how they were going to interpret some of the Star Wars like traditional things like the sound of a lightsaber. But they do no changes to those things at all. It's exactly... when a lightsaber ignites, it's the sound of a lightsaber that we've heard since, you know, 1977.
Yes.
So I thought that's a kind of a cool touch. And then anyway, so they're fighting on this log. And one of the things they reference in the kind of the featurette, behind the scenes featurette, is that they wanted to pay homage to episode 3, where it's Obi-Wan and Anakin fighting on the lava river.
Gotcha.
They wanted to do that. And then there's another homage to episode 1 in that scene where she's like, looking through the waterfall and kind of like slashes it with her lightsaber.
Mm-hmm.
And it like creates steam. It's supposed to pay homage to Maul, like hitting the red barrier when he's like super impatient.
Oh, okay.
So I thought that was kind of cool. These kind of like little bits and pieces that didn't pick up on when I was watching it.
Yeah. I also really liked her, her parasol of with all the sabers coming out of the end of it. I thought that was so neat. Like we see a lot of cool new sort of things to do with lightsabers, but that was such a perfect mix of Star Wars lightsabers, but like quirky kind of cool Japanese element. Right. It was just, I loved it. I was like, that's so badass looking. I'm very into it. I want one.
I mean, I think the thing with the parasol things got made fun of a lot.
What? I thought it was so cool. I'm like,
it got made fun of a lot. And,
I don't care. Well, they're
before,
wrong.
I mean, before the, like when it was in the trailer, people were making fun of it.
Oh, okay. But
what I liked about it was that it was like a accessory to her lightsaber.
I know.
It was like an add-on piece.
Yeah, it wasn't just her full lightsaber. It was just a parasol. I'm like, that doesn't make sense, but she could take hers out and then it's...
Right.
I don't know. I just thought it was...
it's
to
creative.
Me, I like those kind of weird things in Star Wars.
You like you like it when the Inquisitors are like, flying on their
I never had an issue with that. Like, it's definitely
so
kind of goofy. And
it's
so
goofy.
But the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool, I guess. Like, but no, I thought it was neat. Because like a parasol traditionally is so like delicate and fancy. And it's just to like protect you from the sun. It can't even protect you from rain. Like they're just very, you know, high class.
Right.
You know,
yep,
pretty. Totally. And it's like, no, this one will murder you. So I liked it.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Anything else out of this short stand out to you?
No, not really. I was gonna say I also did like the it was almost like a probe droid, but it was being driven by a what's he's called from episode 1, Sebulba, like one of those guys, and it had knives on it. But it was like little like lightsaber knives.
Yes, that's pretty cool actually too.
I remember thinking
it burst out of a wall and like that thing looks deadly.
I know.
There's actually
I was like, that thing's dope looking. What I was there, it's cool.
There is these like, I guess, yeah, there's these kind of like protectors of the village, and you have like a Bossk type character there.
Yeah.
And you have like a what the heck am I, what's the word I'm looking for? Tatooine. They have the
Tusken Raiders.
Tusken Raider is one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you have like an IG droid.
Yeah, yeah.
And like it's just really cool. And then the other thing that jumps out at me that I really liked was the design of the troopers. These kind of like wearing these kind of like half.
Yeah, because it was almost like everything.
Yeah,
everything has kind of fallen apart a little bit. So they've got like pieced together, sort of like making their own masks out of the stormtrooper masks. I thought that was cool too. No, so this was a top notch episode.
Yeah, totally. And one of the other things I really liked overall about all of them is trying to like decipher when in the Star Wars universe they're supposed to be set, because ultimately most take on when they're set, not all of them necessarily reveal that, but this one seems to be set post episode 8, 9. Post episode 9, it seems like.
Yeah, I think so.
When the First Order's kind of fallen apart and then these are people kind of like filling in.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not clear. Like, it could be really anywhere in the new era, kind of the sequel trilogy era. So I don't know. I just like trying to like decipher that. And obviously, when you go to the next episode, which is Tatooine Rhapsody,
yeah,
you get a very obvious, like, this is set at a very specific time.
Yes,
right, in the prequel, in the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like this episode at first. Okay.
Yeah.
But it did grow, and like in thinking about it more, it did grow on me. Part of that is because it has like characters we know, right? You have Boba
Fair.
Fett voiced by Temuera Morrison in here. And I think that's really cool. And then you have Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who's like the main voice actor here, the lead character.
Yeah.
You have Bobby Moynihan, who's playing Geezer, that kind of the Hutt. He doesn't want to go back.
Yeah.
And so you just got like, I just think it's like, it's a really solid voice cast. And the, although I maybe don't love kind of the more like a less serious take on Star Wars in this case, it certainly looks really cool. I think it has a very distinct visual style.
Yeah, I'll give it that. Yeah.
And I like the idea that you're going to like, they wanted to tell a rock opera,
yes. Yeah.
Rock opera.
Mm-hmm.
In Star Wars. I think that's really cool because I think people describe Star Wars as like a space opera a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So like that's kind of mirroring those things a little bit. And I think that's really cool. And then you got to give props. If anything that can make Boba Fett, just as badass, even when he looks like a little midget version of himself.
Yeah, he looks so tiny.
Or
like a little kid.
Or if you can make Jabba, tap his foot.
Yeah, tap his tail.
Yeah. He's like, ooh, this isn't fun.
Yeah.
Isn't too bad. So I think I like that. So
this one,
Yeah, go ahead.
I was gonna say just for this one, it made me laugh. I'll go with that. Like it was very goofy, but the best thing I kind of got out of this one is it very much gave that Star Wars is for everyone kind of feel, right? Because it was kind of quirky and cute and definitely more along the lines of kind of for kids, or there wasn't anything like super scary or bad happening, or wasn't really dark or sinister. Mm-hmm. This one was just very goofy and just something that I think I, 10 to 12 year old kid would think was like funny and super cool.
Right.
And I obviously like seeing an emo Hutt with emo hair and a nose ring.
yeah, that's true. We talked about like identifying time, like when this is set. This is set, like we said, in the original trilogy, but there's a flashback at the beginning to like just post Order 66, which
yes.
is really cool.
Yeah. See, I kind of got it was like right after Order 66 and maybe like a couple years later. Like it's just not. Oh, yeah, I guess it's Boba Fett though. So, yeah.
Right. So you have to give
it's
him time
later.
To
true.
Grow up. And then also he's got this like his microphone is also his lightsaber, which
yes.
is like so fun. And then like so it's goofy. Like it's just a lightsaber, man, and it goes yeah. and it like makes the sound and everything too.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's cool. I don't even care who you are. So the band, I'm reading from the IMDb here, the band is called Starwaver. The name is printed on the side of their starship in Erebesh.
Yeah.
The starship itself is called the Rolling Gales. The stage that the Starwaver is performing on at the start of the short is built into the belly of the Rolling Gale. So it's like they've got like imagine like a truck. They've got like a semi truck, and then they built a stage into it so they could just like drive up their truck into anywhere.
Yeah.
And like play.
The music gave me very much like high school talent show band. Like, you know, when you had bands in high school that were all the kids you went to high school with, and they, you know, a lot of them had bands, or this guy is like talented, and just, you know, the songs that they would sing, that's kind of gave me the vibe.
I got like a Green Day vibe from it.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. But that's what I mean, the kind of like high school, early angsty teenage punk rock where they don't really.
I would
really
love to hear the Japanese version. I did,
like, actually, yes, that's true.
I haven't gone back and done that. That's one of the things I really should try.
I bet you it's very like, maybe that's rude to say. I was going to say it's more kind of like K-pop, but probably not, because that's more Korean than it is Japanese. Yeah. So
J-pop is what you're looking for. So this is a user review on IMDb. It just says, nope, really didn't like this one. Has no place in Star Wars, and the singing was atrocious. Whatever. So I mean, disagree. I think people are going to dislike this one. But if you're a kid, I think you might really like it. So
that's what I mean about how it's kind of a bit more of an inclusive one. Like, yeah, it's for everyone. It's kind of sweet. It is what it is. So like, not everything can be super creepy, gory.
No.
You know, it's like you got to have a mix. So
totally. Anything else you want to say about Tatooine Rhapsody before we move on to the next one?
Not really.
I'd like to move on to the next one. Okay, so the next one is Twins. Now, Twins is interesting because it's very visually cool, but I think one of the most like over the top, like completely ridiculous ones. And this one's done by Trigger. They actually do two. They do this one, and they do the one with the old man, the elder, I think it's called.
Oh, did they? Okay, I like that one.
So I guess Trigger was founded by two different founders. And so each of the founders did their own. The younger version did Twins.
Okay.
And, you know, I've heard a bunch of different people talk about it. And like, it's like, oh, it's kind of like a reimagined version of the original trilogy or the original movie with Luke and Leia.
With Luke and Leia. Yeah. Like if they were dark side. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And I did think like, that's kind of cool, like a cool idea, but like there's some of the stuff here just so silly, like this kind of these twin Star Destroyers that have like this gun in the middle. Yeah. It's so funny looking.
The Gemini, I think it was called, or something like that. Gemini Star Cruiser, which I was like, okay, that's kind of clever, but
Gemini class, I think.
Okay, that's what it was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a couple elements of this one that I thought were like interesting, because honestly, I kind of spaced out a few times during this episode, both times I watched it. But I don't 100% understand what their whole armor was, and like the kyber crystal going into the armor. I'm like, that's kind of a cool idea, but I just don't really know what they were trying to do with it.
I don't really know either. I mean, it's like, oh, they're channeling their dark sides with
the suits, armor. And then they were going to put that energy into a cannon and blow planets up, I'm assuming.
Unclear. Okay. But like, ultimately, I just think it looks cool. Like, there's a lot. Yes, like, there's this moment where he cuts the ship in half, like on an upside down Star Destroyer.
Oh yes, lightsaber,
or upside down X-wing. And it's like, and then jumps to hyperspace, and you kind of get this kind of like almost Last Jedi esque. What's the word I'm looking for here? Holdo maneuver look, where it's just black and white and still and.
Yeah.
Exploding. I think that looks really cool. And the fight itself is pretty cool, but like, it's just nothing special. It's like, there's just very little character. We basically don't know any of these characters at all. And they're just thrown into a big fight. And it's like, all right, if you say so.
Yeah.
You
know what I mean? This one, I think mostly just kind of the storyline sort of just confused me a little bit. I'd say not confused me, but it just wasn't as concrete. Cause then at one point, there's all of a sudden like a flashback. I'm like, is this a flashback or is he actually talking to her? Are they outside of their bodies discussing, you know what I mean? You know what part I'm talking about?
Yes. I think it's a flashback.
So I was, I was just confused. I'm like, I couldn't figure out whether that was a flashback or whether they're kind of like talking to each, I don't know. I didn't get it as much. I was like, this is a little bit confusing, but she does deflect a ship blast at some point. And I was like, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of cool visual stuff here. It just feels like very much like you could probably put no dialogue in this and just make it like a just pure visual storytelling.
That's true, really actually. Yeah. Yeah.
This one also has, pretty big name voice talent for the English dub. You have Neil Patrick Harris as Kare.
Oh, really?
Yeah, who's the boy?
I should have looked that up, but yeah.
And then great. You have Alison Brie as Am, who's the one with like Darth Vader style helmet. By the way, her helmet's supposed to be kind of designed loosely on the kind of the concept art for Vader. So I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, this one gave me like very much Sailor Moon vibes, like the anime style.
Sure, yeah, totally.
But that's the only anime real like what you would call it that I have.
Well, your history.
My history with anime is Sailor Moon and probably a little bit of Pokemon. That's about it.
So. For the record, I also watch Sailor Moon, so you can add that to my repertoire.
So, yeah. I did like that they had R2-O as his droid. Instead of like R2, I was like, oh, that's cute. It's R2-O.
Yeah. There's some cool, fun droid naming in this whole thing.
There is. And he sounded obviously exactly like R2 with his little screams. And
Yeah. I also, Mark Thompson voices Stormtroopers in this short. Mark Thompson does a lot of the voices. He does a lot of the audiobooks.
Interesting.
For Star Wars. So he'll do like an entire cast of characters with him just changing up his voice and stuff. So that's kind of fun.
I have never listened to an audiobook before.
Here's a sidebar on Star Wars audiobooks. I love them because it's like a little mini stage play. Some of them have multiple voice casts. You'll have like three or four people doing different voices.
Okay, cool.
And other times you'll have just one person doing a bunch of different voices. But always you get the music is always like, they always like put the right music in there.
Oh, I didn't know audiobooks had
sound
music.
Sound effects. They're like, yeah. So they kind of like add to the experience a little bit for me. It kind of becomes this kind of like audio play. More so than like just reading a book. I really like it.
Because I'm such a weirdo with books. Like I very much have to read them. I didn't think I would ever enjoy an audiobook because I'm a very, like when I read a book, I can see it happening in my brain. And I know that not everybody can do that or is like that brains.
I think that's the idea. Like you're reading a book, you're supposed to be able to envision it. I think that you get into that flow state and then...
No, but some people can't. Some people don't have like an inward eye.
Imagination?
Imagination. They don't... Their brain doesn't actually like show them real images.
Right.
Yeah. So some people just don't. So I understand why people would like audiobooks better for that.
Well, just for different learners. I just fall asleep when I read books. So I'll sit there and I'll fall asleep every time. So I can't do it.
Would be nice to be able to technically read a book while doing something else, like at work.
Oh, that's another thing,
you know
too.
What I mean? Yeah. I can't do two things while reading a book.
That's
so
true.
Yeah.
I like to put them on. If I have long road trips, I'll put a Star Wars audiobook on.
Yeah. Sorry, sidebar on audiobooks.
No, I think that's totally fair. I'm a big fan of Star Wars audiobooks. I've listened to more Star Wars audiobooks than I've read Star Wars books.
Oh, okay.
Quite a few of them now. Okay, so let's move on. Anything else you want to say about Twins?
No, not really.
Okay, we are leaving that one then, and we'll go to the next one, which is...
It would be Village Bride. I liked this one.
Oh, you also really like the Village Bride. I agree. I think it just looks so pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Just full stop, super cool looking. Love the mask. The rocket high heel shoes are hilarious.
No, that made me mad.
What? What makes you mad about it?
The one thing that makes me the most annoyed and mad, and
this is
granted,
a cartoon.
Again, I know, and I know it happens in a lot. Like it was obviously in Sailor Moon all the time and other like cartoons and stuff. It pisses me off when they take a female character who's supposed to be kicking ass and they put her in high heels.
She is kicking ass.
Just stop it. Stop putting female characters in high heels and weird outfits and crop tops and like boots. Like, just let them be normal.
What if they want to wear that? What if she wants to have
That's
rocket boots?
Fine. Yeah. The fact that they were rocket high heels, I was like, okay, it gets a bit of a pass. But the second I saw those, and I was like, can we not put this woman in high heels and be like, look at her do stuff in her high heels. I'm like, this is dumb. But fine. They were rocket boots. They had a purpose.
They're pretty cool.
I would wear those, but.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. So the log line for this is: a Jedi on the run takes in the unique customs of a remote village under the threat by a warlord. And I just think like everything looked super cool. Like there's this kind of like old Jedi with this weird helmet and you have this like female Padawan who's kind of like now on the run. And it seems like this is, if we're trying to nail down timelines here, this seems like it's kind of like I guess just post Order 66.
That's what I kind of gathered. Yeah. Cause she kind of mentions in the beginning about how she has to be careful when she moves around. So it makes sense. Yeah.
So, and you have this kind of like these characters who, are been kind of lost. They're kind of hidden away from the galaxy and they just, they understand the Force, but they don't know that that's what it's called. They just have a connection to their planet and like the way that, like nature and everything kind of all breathes and touches. So you have these two people, this this boy who's getting married to this girl. He has to carry her up a mountain. It looks so hard.
Yeah. I thought it was so sweet.
Yeah, it's very cute.
I don't know if that's any sort of like old Japanese
custom
or something. I'm not too sure, but I thought it was a very sweet custom about how she can't get her shoes or her feet dirty when they go to this sacred place. I was like, oh, that's very, like, I liked that.
Yeah. And I just generally like how slow this episode is for most of it. And it's very traditional in some ways about like this kind of like this master and apprentice type plot, but it's told in such a fascinating way. And like, like I said, the visual style is so cool here. One of my favorite like looking ones. And, you have this reluctant Jedi who doesn't want to get involved, but chooses to do the right thing. And it's like, it all works for me. The thing is, a lot of these kind of blend together in my brain. Like some of these stories, like story are we talking about when and all that kind of stuff. But like, I'm kind of skimming through these as we talk about them. And again, I'm just kind of coming back to this idea of just like very slow story, right? It's got some action in it. At the end, obviously, when she decides to take her mask off and just like cut through droids and stuff, and it looks just badass.
Well, yeah, you're right. It does take a while to kind of get to that like that action, right? It's like, oh, okay, what's going on here? And then you hear like, okay, well, she's kind of not sacrificing herself, but the big bad guys wanted to take her grandfather, but she offered herself instead as collateral, kind of thing. So it's that very kind of sacrificial story of this like young girl who's doing something for her family and
and okay, I'm just looking, so they land on this kind of like Corellian, they almost land on like a Millennium Falcon style ship.
Yeah, and I know, hey.
And they blow it up with his helmet turns out to be some sort of rocket.
I was like, so
it's
good.
Like, this is the coolest shit.
I know.
And all the battle are great too, because they're all voiced by Matt Wood, who does the voice of the battle droids since the prequel trilogy.
Yeah. So good. Anytime the dumb battle droids come up, they're like, wow, what's that?
B1 stuff. Obviously you have, I misspoke earlier when I said that he was like an older Jedi. He's not a Jedi. He's just like an old wise man.
I was going to say, I didn't think he was a Jedi. He seemed more like someone doing research on the planet. Like it was something different. But I thought it was very cool when they showed that the planet had its own memories. Like they did that whole thing about how the planet used to look, and there's that old memory of her and the guy that she's marrying putting the rocks in the river.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, that's very cool that the planet kind of was showing was showing its Force memories. I'm like, oh, that's a really neat kind of take on the Force and like a very neat aspect of it, where it's not just people who can wield it, it's planets as well being able to do things. I was like, that's very interesting.
I also love the design of her lightsaber.
Yes,
which
me
has
too.
Got this kind of like flat blade, almost like darksaber-esque look, but it's also yellow.
It's yellow.
And also there's like pointy yellow elements in the hilt too. I just think that, first of all, big sucker for yellow lightsabers. I thought it was really cool that they went that direction with Rey's final version of her lightsaber. And I don't know, I can't remember if it's this one or if it's Lopin Ocho that has homage to the Rey's theme. But anytime there's a version of Rey's theme, I'm a sucker, because it's one of the best themes in Star Wars. I think it's criminally underrated.
Yeah, I did not pick that up. But
the other thing is like some of the music in these ones really work. Like going back to the Duel, I think the music in that one's really good, and there's obviously like an homage to Duel of the Fates in there. But some of these, the music is better than others. We'll just put it that way, or more memorable anyway. So the next one we have is the Ninth Jedi. This might be the best one.
Oh, okay.
It's certainly the most well liked. I would probably put it near the top, if not the top.
This is definitely my top three, but it's not my favorite one out of all of them.
I just think it's one of the most fully thought out stories.
It does have the best, yes, it has the most thought, like complex kind of story that, yeah, that you kind of get like a lot of story out of it. That's true.
And it seems like, so we don't know if we're getting a Visions 2. I would be shocked if we didn't. I'll just put it that way.
Okay.
I think
yeah.
There's no way they're like, yep, we did it once. That's it. I think we'll get Visions 2, and I bet you a lot of it will be brand new stories, but I think that you will probably see some sequels to some of the stories you've seen here.
Ooh, I would like that for a few of them.
You might see Abdul 2, and you might see a sequel to this, The Ninth Jedi. There's people online saying that they got really like alternate versions of the sequel trilogy vibes out of this. Like, this is could have been one of the stories that you could have tried to tell as a version of this out of...
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Instead of what we got out of the sequel trilogy. I just think it looks really good. This is the same studio, by the way, that did Ghost in the Shell. There's just so many cool visual like things they do where the camera's flipping around and rotating a lot. The design of just like the temple itself is really awesome.
Yeah.
Turns out it ends up looking like a lightsaber, which is, I think, even cooler.
Yeah.
Right. But it's, turns out this short, which turns out to be, I think, the longest one at 22 minutes, was originally going to be one of two different ideas that they had. Like, they're like, oh, we want to do this Jedi story where it's turns out where it's a trap. Or I want to do this story of a Jedi blacksmith, like a lightsaber.
Yeah. Yeah.
Blacksmith. Right.
Which is a really neat idea.
Yes, it is. It's super cool. Because if you think about the, like, you go to Clone Wars, right? And like all the Padawans had to build their own.
Yeah. Like they get their own pieces and put them together. I'm like, that's very like interesting to have a, you know, like that's not really around anymore in this timeline. So,
right.
Yeah. Like having almost like a smith. Exactly. I'm like, that's so cool.
So yeah, the log line here is the daughter of a lightsaber smith is pursued by dark forces while on a dangerous mission. So not like it doesn't tell you much in the log line, but it is like a pretty straightforward story, but it is just like really well executed and the world building feels really seamless.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You kind of understand exactly where this is set. By the way, they've kind of said this is set post episode 9 as well. This is like far flung future. Not necessarily super far into the future, but definitely further along in the timeline than we've seen probably. And of course, none of this is canon. Right?
Right.
This is all just
yeah.
like fun versions of stories. So no one can get upset about that.
I was going to say, people will be way too upset if it was canon.
But there's just so many cool and I think well thought out ideas here. Like this idea
of the
art of lightsaber making being a lost art, right? So in Clone Wars, you have this droid who kind of has like all the knowledge of all the different lightsabers and all the different lightsabers that every Jedi's ever had. And like, guides the Padawans through building their own, right?
Right.
Obviously, the best one being the Wookiee one that's made out of wood.
yeah. So cool.
Obviously the best one. But in this case, it's like, okay, imagine that droid died. All the Jedi who knew how to build lightsabers are dead.
Mm-hmm.
Now what do you do?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So you have this, I don't know where this person learned to make lightsabers, but they don't know how to wield them because they're not a Jedi themselves. They just know how to make them.
Right.
So you have this concept of a lightsaber that taps into the force sensitivity of the user. So she picks it up, she turns it on, it's kind of like transparent. But they kind of also say, oh, you can adjust the length or whatever. He's like, no, it's not like that. It's like if you're strong in the force, it'll be the color that it should be and it'll be the length that you need it to be and all that
right.
kind of stuff.
Yeah, like
I feel like that's such a cool idea.
Yeah, it's like you kind of got to get like attuned to your saber, right? Like it's I thought that was such a neat concept for it because that's kind of always what I thought, you know, when I was a kid and didn't know anything about lightsabers or how they worked or, you know, I thought the colors kind of meant, I kind of thought they all meant something different.
Mm-hmm.
Which they kind of say that like, oh, the green ones mean offense and the blue ones mean defense or whatever it is. But I just thought this was very neat that the lightsaber kind of decides, not that it decides, but it like looks into you and it chooses its color from there. I'm like, oh, that's such a really like neat concept.
And that it can change like in the middle of a fight too, which is super cool.
So neat.
Right?
Yeah.
And just so I don't know. I just love the, like I said, the world that they built here. And I could totally see a sequel and would love to see one. It's so gorgeous. Like, again, the visuals of this one are so cool. I like that they do this kind of switcheroo where it's kind of like, oh, like, here's the Jedi. They don't know how to make lightsabers, so we're going to call them here and I'm going to provide them with them. But it turns out it's a trap. But the way it starts, it's with this kind of like hooded character and like dark armor with red eyes. You're like, this guy's for sure a bad guy.
Oh, yeah. Like, it, you
turns
think,
out he's not.
Yeah, it's so
such a fun. Yeah,
I loved it. Yeah, because at first you think, okay, all these Jedi are here and they're looking for lightsabers. You're like, oh, this is obviously a trap to like kill them all. And some Sith is going to come out and yada, yada. But yeah, then the way it switches, I'm like, oh, that's so cool.
Turns out they're all Sith.
Yeah.
Which is like, what a twist I did not see coming.
No, me too. And then you have the one like poor guy in the middle that turns his lightsaber on. It's blue. And then the rest of them are.
Yeah.
You're like, he's just like kind of fumbling around. It's very sweet. But
it's just like a lot of this, just so like there's so many just, I think, small little nods to Star Wars, like where the lightsaber smith is kind of like feels like Tatooine, right? And instead of like multiple suns, you've got these rings around the planet that you can kind of see from down below, and they're fishing for kyber crystals with these kind of like weird I don't even know what you call it, like trebuchet type machines, right? Catapults,
yeah.
Almost.
Like, yeah, like pretty much.
The sky. And like, you have this super cute droid, right? Like this little like chirping little floating guy. It one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Actually, by the way, and although the lightsaber smith himself says he isn't, quote unquote, a Jedi, when he turns one of the lightsabers on, it is blue. It's a fully blue lightsaber. So.
Yeah, I think he is. At least, yeah, I think he's probably a Jedi or has.
Well, he doesn't do a very good job of defending himself.
No. Well, we don't know. He might not be dead, but.
That's true. That's a good point. Maybe he's not dead, but it just seems like.
Probably, yes.
So anyway, I loved this one. I think it's so fun. Super cool.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say about the Ninth Jedi?
No, I just like on my thing, I just said I would watch more of it. So it was, yeah, I think it had really good characters and character development. And yeah, the storyline was really cool.
It just feels like one of the most fleshed out ones. Like,
yes, yeah. It was very well done in 22 minutes. It covered a lot, so.
Totally. And like, no shade against the other shorts. I'm just, some felt more like kind of like a small idea, whereas this felt like a fully fledged world that we were just seeing a glimpse of. And that's okay. It doesn't have to be one or the other. I preferred that kind of more, fleshed out type.
I would agree with that.
Okay, so the next one we have is TOB1 or To Be One or Toby.
I was like, Toby.
Yeah.
Or Toby One. Like Obi-Wan.
I love the name because I think TOB1 is such a fun way of playing with the droid naming convention.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this kind of Pinocchio story. It's a droid who wants to be a Jedi. And this one got a little bit of hate, but I love this one. I think it's got so much style and pizzazz.
It was definitely different for sure than like the other ones. I think it had a very different feel. And I think that's probably why maybe people didn't like it as much. Cause again, it has a little bit more of an innocent kind of vibe to it.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a cybernetic boy who dreams of being a Jedi, discovers a dangerous truth about his creator. Now, this is also, I believe, set between episodes 3 and 4, I believe, but it's not entirely clear.
I would assume so because, how I always watch things the second time I watch them, I put subtitles on.
Right.
And the thing that's it called, they call it an Inquisitor. So I'm like, okay, so it's within the realm of the Inquisitors. Which is,
mm-hmm.
I feel like is a pretty specific timeline that the Inquisitors were around, if I'm not wrong.
Yes, that's true. And also, like, what I really love is that there is, like, all these, like, carvings along the wall of his room.
Yeah.
And they tell the story of kind of, like, the original trilogy.
Yes, I definitely noticed the little character on the wall that looked like Grievous because it had four arms.
Yeah. So it's like, this is, the prequel trilogy. But it doesn't, like, it also looks like it shows, like, Hoth and stuff. So it's not really necessarily clear when exactly this is set.
Right.
But it's somewhere in that time when the Inquisitorius are still active.
Right.
So again, people are going to give this one a little bit of a hard time. I just think, you know, lighten up a little bit is my my general take on that. I like the, I just like the vibe. I like this idea that there's this Jedi who has missing both of his arms, right?
Yeah.
Is it both? Or it's both of his arms, right?
I think so, yeah.
It's voiced by Kyle Chandler. Who turns out to is he a scientist or is he a Jedi or whatever? Turns out he is a Jedi, mm-hmm. and he has kind of put his belief that he used to have, I guess, Padawan named Toby. It seems like that's kind of, maybe I'm misreading it. Is that kind of, are you?
I did not pick up on that at all, but could be. I don't, yeah.
Well, there's this moment when TOB-1 finds out that his creator was also a Jedi, mm-hmm. right? And there's this where he looks like a real boy, and it's like he calls him Toby. So I don't know if maybe I'm just misinterpreting that. I don't know.
It could be, but, honestly, because he does say to like keep you safe. He's like, well, why didn't you tell me? And he's just like, oh, to keep you safe.
But, right.
Yeah. I like the whole idea of this Jedi that has put his being a Jedi aside and how he's going to this planet or maybe other planets and trying to create life on them and create a sustainable planet. I was like, that's a really neat, because that's definitely an issue in Star Wars. Like all half the like fighting on these planets is usually about resources. So yeah. I think it's a very sweet thing that a Jedi would be like, okay, like trying to make this galaxy a better place by going to these uninhabitable planets and try to create a habitable planet out of them.
Right. I just want to know what happened to his arms. Like, was there, did he fight against an Inquisitor and like he survived, but it cost him both of his arms? And like, I don't just like, it's just so, I don't know. It's very, that's a fascinating story. I also love, this is another story of something being powered by a kyber crystal that's not a lightsaber, right? So
yeah,
turns out he's being powered by a kyber crystal, which I think is a really kind of fun idea. And by the way, we don't know if this is Tatooine, but it sure looks like Tatooine for the record.
Right, yeah.
Like just like the two suns and like the desert and everything about it just looks like Tatooine. So though it's not clear, I wouldn't be shocked if they later said, yeah, that's kind of exactly what we're going for. One bit of trivia here is that the ship that TOB-1 finds in his underneath the house is a T-16 Skyhopper. This is also the ship that can be seen in the background of the Lars family garage in the original Star Wars. The Inquisitor uses a TIE Advanced V1. This is the variant of the TIE fighter was introduced in the in Empire Day in 2014. So I don't know what that means. But again, this is kind of this through line that, especially with the ships, I found most of the ships in these anthologies were very true to the designs of the actual ships in Star Wars, right? So you have this cannon ship in the T-16 and this TIE fighter, and then later you get like these cruisers and stuff that are all very much like that, looks exactly like what they look like in video games and everything else. So cool stuff. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to say about TOB-1?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, not really.
Okay.
Again, not one of my favorites, but it was cute.
Okay, moving on. Which one is next? We have The Elder. So this is the other one that was done by Trigger. I might be wrong. So if anyone gets me there, let me know. This is one of my favorites for sure.
Yes, me too. It was very,
a
very
Jedi good. And his Padawan pursue a dark and powerful presence. This is very much feels like one of the rare ones that feels like it could fit right into Star Wars canon and, and be right at home.
See, you know why I think so? Because I got right off from the beginning, I got very much kind of old school Anakin Obi-Wan vibes from these.
Oh, totally.
Two.
Yeah.
Like you got
very
the
classic stuff.
Yeah. You got like the older, you know, the master who's a little bit more like quiet and reserved and knowledgeable. Then you have the young kid who just wants action and he just wants adventure and doesn't really, you know, he's a little bit more wayward. So I thought I liked it. I liked their relationship.
So when do you think this one is set?
I have to think. See, this one sounded, again, like the Sith hadn't been around for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It was hard for me to place this one because they're in the Outer Rim and they are Jedi and it seems, you know, master and apprentice. So, it's not necessarily... I guess, yeah, this would make more sense if it was during, like, prequels, I guess.
Yeah, era, so this, according to the trivia here, this takes place before The Phantom Menace.
Okay, so, yeah, that makes sense, actually, because the like Sith haven't been around in hundreds of years or whatever. Right. So, mm-hmm. yeah, that makes sense.
So I love that timeline. That like this is just, I guess, before, after the High Republic era and just before the Phantom Menace and, you know, everything that we know that takes place there. So mm-hmm. I just think it's a cool unexplored timeline. There's a couple Obi-Wan stories that take place there when he's a Padawan.
Definitely, yeah.
So, like I said, really love this one. Also love the voice work here. I think it's all really, really great, especially and surprisingly by David Harbour, who plays Tajin Crosser, who's the master here.
Okay.
Very much reminds you of a like a Qui-Gon Jinn
yes.
type
yes.
character,
yeah.
right? And then you have Jordan Fisher, who plays Dan Gavosh. Love that name, by the way. Very good Star Wars name.
Yeah.
and James Hong, who plays the old man, who's like a very, he's like in his 90s, but a long time anime voice actor. And I just love, everything about it is cool. Like it sure, it's very, I would say maybe a little cliche, maybe too cliche at some points. Like this is like, I feel like I've seen this story a lot of times, but I love mm-hmm. this interpretation in this visual style. And this like the way that especially that final fight ends with this kind of like almost reminds me of the Obi-Wan Maul final
yes,
confrontation.
Yes, for
and
sure.
And he kind of does this little trick where he turns his lightsaber off and
yeah.
then turns it on. And then, oh, it's just really cool.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought this one was very true to the mixing of like the Japanese anime story with a Star Wars story.
Yeah,
like, you know,
totally.
Like you have this kind of like creepy villain guy who's still pretty mm-hmm. powerful, but he's really scary looking. And yeah, I don't know. I feel like you get a lot of those kind of characters as villains in anime. And,
right.
you know, they're just like very, like kind of almost like demonic looking, right?
Yes. They're yeah. So that's what they exactly what they said in the little featurette was that they wanted to go with like a demon look
yeah.
for this character.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, so there's a couple of things that I think really add that make things like, I think for me, add like some really interesting layers. So they talk about in this featurette, the behind the scenes featurette, they talk about how the director, Masahiko Otsuka, is quite old and he's ready to retire. But when he was a kid, one of the first things he did was make a little like puppet show out of Star Wars action figures.
Oh, really?
And that was one of the first things he ever did. So he felt like, you know, it felt very appropriate to him that he would end his career on a Star Wars project.
Oh, I love
that. And he was very honored to be asked to do it. And so part of the story is him kind of telling this idea of him having kind of gone through the different kind of stages of being the learner and then becoming the teacher.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's this really great line in this episode where it's like, you know, you will keep getting stronger and I will keep getting weaker. That's the way of the universe.
Yeah.
Or the galaxy,
yeah.
I think he says. And it's just so cool. And it's like, of course, these are all like truths and truisms and like I said, cliches, but it's really, it's done with compassion. It's done with kind of this care.
Yeah.
That I think really shines through. And again, I like the performances here. I think by the voice cast, I think stronger than almost any of the other performances here. And yeah, I just love it. It's up there with one of my favorites for sure.
For sure. There are so many like even little things with this, like when it starts raining and then it's almost like I know it doesn't switch to black and white, but it seems like it does because everything mm-hmm. dulls except for the colors of the sabers. And mm-hmm. then you can see the mist coming off of them as the rain is hitting the lightsabers, which was so yes. like different to me because I feel like you don't get to see a lot of that in Star Wars when it's heavy mm-hmm. rain and how that would actually affect a lightsaber.
Well, there's that one scene with Obi-Wan and Jango where he has his lightsaber out, but it's like not very, it's very short.
Yeah.
And like I would, so anytime you get to see rain on lightsabers, it's so cool because it like
cool.
turns the rain into like steam.
Yeah. I love it.
You hear it go sizzling.
Yeah.
It's such a cool look. I love that, by the way, that Padawan, like for sure loses at first and you're like, that guy's dead.
Oh yeah.
what a crazy twist. Like I was like, that's really ballsy of them. But then it turns out he's not dead, which I thought was a little lame, but whatever.
yeah.
Which is because like, if you're going to like, it's like, what's this like old school Sith guy doing, keeping him alive, I guess as like a, as yeah. a,
maybe bait. Yeah, I would assume, because Sith kind of do like to do that, where they will toy with a stronger Jedi in a way that they're trying to get them to react. They're trying to get them to turn, or, you know, because they're just so evil that they're like, oh, I want to do like the worst thing in front of you to try and, you know,
like make you feel pain and anger and hate. And
exactly.
All things
But
I don't know. I just liked this idea that the master at one point, he's like, you know, I think his Padawan's like, do you think if you had faced him when he was in his prime, do you think you would have beat him? And he's like, I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like, he does the lightning thing with his hand. Like he starts to get really angry and he does. And I liked how it kind of shot out and then hit like a lightning strike in the, you know, because a lot of times we see it hitting a person, they get like electrocuted, but I feel like we don't actually see it act like as if it was an actual like hitting the earth the way it really would.
Because he dodges it. Yeah. And it's like,
oh,
that's
cool. I'm like, that's cool to actually see it hit something else in a different way. I was like, so I liked that. But yeah, he was basically saying like that kind of power is insane, even for that, you know, old Sith to have.
Yeah. I'm watching the moment right now in front of me. And I'm just thinking like, this is one of the cool, like, it's just so cool.
It's
the way he's like dodging the lightning and it looks like he's going to get struck down by his other lightsaber. But then the Padawan throws his lightsaber in to make it just like inventive and interesting. I guess they also kind of did this like interesting design for the Sith ship that they had like outsourced, and they were like really excited by who did it. I don't really understand the reference, but I also like how when the Sith dies, he kind of like turns into like mush.
Yeah, he crumbles into dust like a vampire.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it's kind of like it reminds me of kind of like a Palpatine. It's like he can kind of, his bodies are so old and used up. It's like if the second his essence is no longer in them, they would just like disintegrate.
It just disintegrates. Basically. And it you know, it's almost the how like a Jedi, when they pass, they go into nothing.
Yeah.
Whereas, but a Sith just leaves this charred, gross pile of ash, you know? I'm
totally.
Like, oh, it's very, I liked it. Yeah. I love, this was probably my, top in, again, in the top three.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I haven't done my rankings yet. We'll do those at the end here.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else you want to say on that one?
I have nothing else in my very detailed notes.
Okay. On to the next one, which is another fan favorite. We have Lop and Ocho.
Mm-hmm.
And I like a lot of the visual stylings here, especially some of these shots of like street level where you have this, the Star Destroyer kind of like looming over top. I've always liked that ever since Rogue One had that that Star Destroyer like sitting on top of Jeddah like that.
Yes,
I just think it's so imposing and so visually striking. And so they, this is Geno Studio. I'm not familiar with their work necessarily, but they use this like rabbit character. I guess there is precedence of because of an early comic book. So for those who may not know, so there is a blue space rabbit in Star Wars comics.
Is there?
Yes. And it was one of the very first comics that they did. And George Lucas hated it. Like, he hated it. And ever since then, he basically said, he said, I want to have final say over these characters.
Gotcha.
If you're going to do them, I want to have a say, because he hated it. But it was already, it was too late. It was done. So, so there is precedent for bunny rabbit characters in Star Wars.
I thought she was very cute.
Yeah, she is very cute. Lop.
Oh, I see. I looked this up now. Yeah, he's kind of green, this rabbit.
Yeah, like a bluey green.
Yeah. I can see why he hated him. He looks kind of stupid. The one they did,
well,
it just looks
like,
way
it just seems
cuter.
Like, this isn't really wasn't the kind of style he was going for in Star Wars, right? He was like, this is just so over the top and silly.
No, hers is like, the one that they did is cuter in the way that her ears kind of look like hair and it's,
and they flop down.
Yeah, it's a little bit more, what is it, Lola Bunny from.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, in maybe the just like the smallest way, like she's very, it's far off from Lola Bunny.
Not
while
like,
still being Lola Bunny.
Yeah.
There's no, she's not portrayed as sexy.
Yes.
In that
no,
way.
No, she's very cute though. And it's,
But I like the story here. I like how they use this found family. She's adopted by this kind of this patriarch, right? In the family who feels bad about having sold out to the Empire, but his daughter, whose true daughter is kind of disillusioned with that philosophy and thinks that the empire is going to bring, you know, strength and stability, kind of the lot, you know, believing some of the propaganda, right? And then this kind of traditional idea of like family heirlooms being passed down. And so it turns out the family heirloom is a lightsaber, right? Which is really, really cool.
Yeah.
Then this kind of final confrontation between Lop and her sister, where she's in this like imperial, like white garment. And you kind of like, I don't know if the sun is necessarily setting, but I'm in this kind of like, I'm trying to think of the word I'm looking for here, but this kind of side angle where you have like all this, you kind of see them in silhouette. That's the
word. Silhouette. Yeah.
Silhouette. Gotcha. And I just think it's like this, there's a lot of traditional Star Wars ideas here. I just think it's really well executed. It's not my favorite because ultimately I feel like this turn that we get for the sister feels very, very forced.
It's
but
very
I guess
abrupt.
That's the idea.
Yeah.
The creator says, oh, you know, I hope that it comes through that eventually Lop and Ocho will become sisters again and be friends again. That was like the tone that he was going for. I didn't really pick up on that.
No, I got that maybe she still had hope, but I mean, this is another one where I was like, okay, like I would see, again, I would like to see more of this story. Like I wouldn't be mad if I got another chapter of this.
Yeah. And I like this, the design of the lightsaber here. It's kind of got these like Japanese characters on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of looks more like a traditional sword, which is really cool, but it just glows green. Yeah, I don't know. It's a good one. I think it's one of the ones that a lot of people like that's not as high up on my list as maybe others.
I would agree with you on that. Yeah.
So okay, so here's the full line on the bunny rabbit characters. So Lop is a Lepi, also known as a Lepus carnivorus, the same species as Jaxxon, the character that first appeared in Marvel Comics Star Wars #8, published in 1978. So apparently this planet that they're from is like close to Kashyyyk. So I guess that's like their excuse. That's like, that explains it. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if that actually does explain it.
Yeah, it's in this sector where there's other furry things.
Yeah, right. So anyway, that's Lop and Ocho. Any other thoughts on that one?
Yeah, no, I thought like, again, I liked this one. It wasn't one of my favorites, but I didn't like obviously dislike it. I did like it. So I would see more of it. So yeah.
I would also say that it's like we got this story, it's the second last one. And
yeah.
I had watched them all in the same evening. So, you know, back to back to back to back. So I was maybe getting a little burnt out. If I had maybe spaced it out or rewatched it, I might have a different opinion.
Yeah, that's fair. I kind of did the same
try
thing.
Try to maybe do that.
Yeah.
And go back and give it another shot.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to the last one, which is called Akakiri, which in Japanese, I understand, means red haze.
Oh, okay.
So this idea, I actually really like this one conceptually, right?
Yeah.
It kind of, and it's interesting that they end on this one, this kind of like kind of sour note of this Jedi
who comes
to the dark side.
A bummer. But this one was one where you're like, okay, you can do a lot more. Again, you could do a lot more with it. It kind of leaves you hanging, I find.
A Jedi returns to his forbidden love to help defend her kingdom from a Sith-like shogun. And there's a couple things that I like. There's this idea that like he does ultimately fail, like his love of his life does die, you know?
Yeah.
But then also another this fun idea of where like, you know, how in the original trailer or in episode 3, Palpatine promises Anakin that, you know, he'll keep people from dying.
Keep your loved ones from dying.
Bring his mom back to life or whatever, right? Ultimately, it's like he doesn't care about any of that stuff. He just wants to control Anakin. But in this, he's like this shogun, see if I can find the name of the character here, does hold up her end of the bargain and says, okay, well, she is dead, but we'll bring her back. They use like force healing. And I think that's kind of cool.
It is,
And I also like there's some kind of like these kind of comedic relief characters in here.
Yes, those guys were very funny.
George Takei plays one of them from Star Trek.
Oh, okay.
And I just love that. So I like that there's a little connection there. These characters who, so I guess it's Ken Young and George Takei, who are these comedic characters. They are supposed to embody the, you know, these droids that we, you know, R2 and C-3PO, but as real people, which was originally what they were kind of envisioned as, and so before they came droids. So they're like, okay, well, what if they were still real people?
Yeah.
So no, that's kind of the idea,
quirky
like that.
And goofy.
Oh yeah. And like have like, they're still like wise, like they will have like these kind of wise cracking jokes, but they're kind of like very, they got a little bit more wisdom to them than you might expect.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we're not fighters, and like, they're like, we wouldn't hurt a fly, like that kind of stuff. It's very good. Uh-huh. So I'm reading the trivia here again from IMDb. This episode was a nod to The Hidden Fortress, which gave much inspiration to George Lucas to write Star Wars, which is cool. And Hidden Fortress, by the way, is a movie from 1958 by Akira Kurosawa.
Hmm.
So there you go. Another Kurosawa film that is an inspiration here. It was another thing that I really liked. I don't know. I just like the idea that you would tell a story that has this kind of like sad ending. You just don't see that very much, I think, in Star Wars.
No, it's true. It's, yeah.
Except for episode 3, obviously.
Yeah. Right. I mean, yeah. It's kind of a sad.
I
would find with this one too, I kind of like that they ended on one that wasn't super, like if they had ended on say that second episode, I've been like, okay, like that was a bit ridiculous.
Right. You want to run on something that's got a little bit more gravitas,
yeah, more the like, kind of seriousness, yeah. And this is kind of like a, to me, this story, you don't really, not that it hasn't started. It feels like it just started. It feels like we didn't actually get the full story in that episode. But
it's almost like we got a sliver of it. Like there's a whole part of like where he falls in love with this woman. We don't meet that part. And then there's a second part of this where he turns to the dark side. What does that mean?
Yeah, and it's like, does she try and get him back? Because it's like, okay, you bring this girl or this woman back to life. But then now what? Like you're on the dark side, so you still can't be with her because you're evil now.
Super evil.
Yeah. And it's like, well, is he evil or is like, how does this work?
This has always been one of those things in Star Wars where like, I guess I turned the dark side now. I just have to be super evil.
Yeah. But it's like, to me, it's almost kind of like selling your soul, right? So it's, it's as soon as you give in to the dark side, it kind of consumes you, right? So it's like that good part of you might still be there, but it's mostly hidden away.
Yeah.
You've let the dark in, so
you buried it. Yeah. So I guess like that's it. So yeah, that's cool. And I think there's just like a lot of cool blended elements here. You've got like this idea, this kind of this Anakin, Revenge of the Sith type stuff. You've got kind of like this Obi-Wan and Satine, kind of story of forbidden love, but also again also like Anakin. You can almost imagine a version where it's like Obi-Wan went back to help Satine and then decided to leave the Jedi Order, and then this version of this kind of story is similar. I can kind of see those through lines here, and I like it. Ultimately, is it one of my favorites? No, but again, we're talking about like the last one and the whole thing, and I think I might have been still a little bit burnt out.
Yeah,
I just love the way it ends. I love that like everything turns to this like this dark red haze at the end, right? Which kind of lends to the name of the episode, of course, right? And there's this cool moment where he's like slashing through these like henchmen characters, and it's pretty cool. We've kind of seen some of this stuff before, because he's the one who murders his own, like the woman still as well.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because there's another kind of classic thing we've seen in Star Wars.
Yeah, and they do it in such a kind of a cool way, right? Like he thinks he's fighting all these bad guys, and then she just shoves this other one at him that looks like, you know, has a mask on and kills her. And
right.
It's, yeah. Ugh, so evil.
Yeah. And obviously like her eyes glow red and stuff. It's just like a very cool look.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, like I said, this is a top notch episode. I don't know where I'd rank it. So speaking of rankings, anything else you want to say on Akakiri before we move on here?
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Okay. So let's go back and let's rank them. Once you go first, tell me what your favorite episode was.
My favorite is the first one. That's definitely my number one out of all of them. And then, like, I don't know, if I have to give like a top three, it's probably the first one there, the duel, and then the elder. And I'm trying to look at my notes here. Village Bride and Ninth Jedi are kind of tied, but Village Bride I liked a little bit more than Ninth Jedi.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so for me, it's probably Ninth Jedi is my first. then the duel, then I don't know, then the elder probably, then I'm gonna go reverse order here, then the village bride, then then Lopin Ocho, then Akakiri, then
yeah,
then the Tatooine Rhapsody, and then the twins. The twins is my least favorite one.
What about Toby or T.O.B.
one? Oh, did I put? Oh, yeah, that's somewhere in between. That's right after Akakiri. I would say T.O.B. one is in there.
Okay, yeah, I think my least favorite is the Rhapsody one, honestly. And then
it is the most like silly one.
Yeah, and then yeah, like T.O.B. one's probably one step up that, and then the twins is one step up from that. But
okay,
yeah, for like my bottom three. The rest are all kind of in the middle, like it's...
Yeah, they're all kind of... Yeah, you kind of interchangeable.
But no, I don't like... Not that I hate those ones. It's just if I'm ranking them, like, those are just the ones that I enjoyed. I was the least engaged in, right? So...
Sure.
Not that they were bad. And again, like, I think there is something for everyone in all of these.
Totally.
And it's a very, very cool thing to be, like, welcomed as Star Wars fans into the anime community and to have something that anime... Maybe people who haven't watched a lot of Star Wars or who anime fans who do watch tons of Star Wars and tons of anime now have something of like two things that they really love. So I just think it's a really cool thing to do.
That's a great point. That's an absolutely great point, because there's probably a lot of Star Wars fans who don't ever watch anime, and this is like a great gateway for them.
Yeah.
Right. Or anime fans who aren't maybe into Star Wars as much, and this is kind of a cool gateway to Star Wars for them. So it can work in either way. And you mentioned like there's something for everyone here. I remember I was listening to a podcast and they're saying basically there's a kind of, it's a double-edged sword in that way, because there's something for everyone, which probably means there's some stuff that you're not going to like.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
But that's okay. But that's okay. You don't have to like everything. Yeah.
No.
It's not, a variety of styles is ultimately good here, especially in an anthology like this. If they're all kind of the samey, you would, and there is some sameness across some of them. But ultimately, I think they're all distinct enough in their own right that makes them kind of stand out from one another.
Definitely.
Okay. Any final thoughts on Star Wars Visions?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be upset to see more of a lot of these stories. Some of them I don't think need more. Some of them I think do. So.
Right. So.
Yeah.
I think we can list them. I think. Duel. The duel, I would like to see a sequel to. The Ninth Jedi,
yes.
I would like to see a sequel to.
Yeah.
I'd like to see a sequel to Lopin Ocho and Akakiri. I don't know if I necessarily need a sequel to The Elder. I think that kind of one stands on its own. It doesn't necessarily need a sequel.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I mean,
I wouldn't say no.
That is the one. I feel like that one, it feels the most normal Star Wars to me out of all of them. So those are
like, why I don't need it. It's like, I can go get that anywhere.
So those characters feel like they could easily fit in anywhere, right? So I would totally agree with what you're saying on which ones you would see more from, for sure.
And the Village Bride too, I could see there being
that character. I would actually, because her lightsaber is got that
super
yellow
cool
tinge too, but to me that's always more of like a mid-ground. I always associate the yellow lightsabers with a little bit more of being like a gray Jedi or someone who's not necessarily light side or dark side. They don't necessarily have any, what's the word I'm looking for?
Allegiance.
Yeah. Like, not that they don't have allegiance. Like, there's obviously right and wrong, but they're kind of just
But she's not a Jedi and she's not a Sith. She's just someone who has a lightsaber and can use the Force.
And more kind of like Ahsoka later on when she's Fulcrum and she's doing things that she just thinks are good.
And she's
and
got
helpful.
The white lightsabers in that case. But like, I agree. Like you think of Jedi, you think of blue and green, right?
Yeah.
Maybe purple. And you think of Sith, you think of red, right? Mm-hmm. And then anything that doesn't fit into those, like those boxes is something that's a little bit different, a little bit less rigid. Obviously, I think if you are a sequel trilogy fan, I think people would be upset if you thought people were like, yellow isn't a Jedi color. I think people think that, you know, Rey's a Jedi and she has a yellow lightsaber. So
I guess
is what it is.
Yeah.
But I really like yellow lightsabers. I think they're really cool looking.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in that case, I think we can wrap it up.
Yeah.
We will, I guess, I don't know. I'm trying to think, when's the next time we'll be back on, on
See
here?
See you in December.
It might be December. Yeah. I mean, like, so it's, I'm thinking it's probably not, we're probably not going to sit down and do an episode on the, like I said, I was telling you before we started recording this, like the sounds of the galaxy of sounds, Star Wars, which is just like a bunch of clips of different sounds from Star Wars. So I don't think we need to, I don't think we need to dive into that.
No.
There, I'm sure will be other things. I think there is a Halloween special. There's a Lego Halloween special, Lego Star Wars Halloween special.
Cute. Oh, I can't
coming
wait
out
for that.
The end of October. Yeah. So maybe we do a little one on that. Maybe not. We'll see how that goes. And then, of course, we have Book of Boba Fett in December, right around Christmas, which is a nice, fun surprise.
I'm so excited
for
that.
Sure, we'll be back for that one. And and just keep an eye on the Twitter at Tower Babblecast to kind of get a sense of when we're going to be doing stuff and not. And of course, listen to the full show, Tower Babble Podcast, where we can talk about all things, not just Star Wars. So we will be back soon with more Star Wars, and we'll talk to you then.